Brought to you by entrepreneurs at the University of Utah. Welcome to the Live, Create, Launch podcast, where we try to provide tools and insights on how to become a better founder, creator, and innovator. Here we go.
And here we go.
What's up? Welcome. I'm your host, Gavin Van Wagener, and today we chat with IP attorney Dustin Howell. IP is that oh-so-important category like patents and trademarks. You know, stuff that can give your idea and business some competitive advantages. Dustin is a shareholder at Workman Nidegger, a very prestigious law firm located here in Salt Lake City. Dustin's experience runs deep in the subjects of physics, optics, mechanics, and mechanical engineering, interests he continues to develop through his work with clients in sports, exercise, medical, petroleum, and other industries. Dustin uses this impressive background to help clients in the preparation and prosecution of U.S. and international patent and trademark applications, as well as licensing and confidentiality agreements and other IP issues. In our discussion today, we cover IP topics like the multiple types of patents and when you should file for one, the differences between trademarks and service marks, the value of your intellectual property and what that can mean to potential investors, and many other interesting subjects regarding the IP space. I learned a ton from talking with Dustin, and I hope you do too. Enjoy.
Welcome. Today, we're joined by Dustin Howell. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
The LaSalle audience certainly appreciates your incredibly valuable time. I don't even want to ask what your hourly rate is so that you don't get any ideas. And but we appreciate you being here. This is super helpful.
Happy to do it. Happy to do it.
Awesome. So Dustin is an IP attorney, has vast knowledge in this and will be helpful for this audience of students and people that are starting businesses, having aha moments and then determining what they need to do to protect that aha moment or that great idea or their intellectual property portfolio. So just a quick little background on Workman Nidegger, the firm that Dustin works with. It's really one of the leaders in the space. Some examples of work your firm has done for businesses that Utahns will probably recognize: Traeger wood fire grills and smokers. You guys helped with utility patents, design patents, and trademarks. Owlette, the smart sock that gives parents insight into the health and well-being of their infants. You helped them with their IP strategy. And also, I think with an example of infringement, IP infringement, the company Lumi, world manufacturer of quality accessories for cell phones, the case that lights up, Kim Kardashian, I think, is involved. Anyway, so your firm is big time. You guys are the experts. So again, we appreciate your time.
Glad to do it. We've had experience across the board. We handle small startups all the way up to the multinational corporations. Anything you need in the IP space, we can help you.
Awesome. So it's Workman Nidegger. We'll put a link in there. We'll make sure that we direct people your way. And I personally have dealt with the firm. I've got a number of patents and a couple of trademarks that lawyers at your firm have helped me with. And it's an awesome firm, highly reputable in Utah, and I'm sure all over the world, frankly. Yeah. So it's awesome to have you with us. So today we want to kind of do a quick course on what all of these IP terms really mean, including IP, intellectual property. Sometimes, we'll be sitting around and you'll hear the phrase, someone will say something pithy or something cool, and they'll be like, TM or, we need to patent that. And do you patent an idea? Do you patent a name? Do you patent this? So my understanding, and it's pretty basic, is there are sort of four types of intellectual property. You've got patent, copyright, trademark, and trade secrets. So maybe cover what a patent is and why it matters and what's important about it.
Sure. So there are actually multiple kinds of patents. What people typically think of when they think of patents are utility patents, which cover machines, processes, computer systems, compositions, chemistry, pharmaceuticals, things like that. And then there are design patents, which cover how things look. So not the function, but the aesthetic. So imagine you could get a design patent on the shape of the iconic Coca-Cola bottle. Something that has a unique look. Then there are plant patents for unique plants, flowers, that kind of thing. So that's kind of the patent world. And then there are trademarks, which are source identifiers.
Okay.
You know, names, product names, company names, logos, slogans, things that identify the source of a good or a service. So Coca-Cola.
So is Coca-Cola a trademark or a service mark?
Coca-Cola, it's a trademark. So trademarks, the idea is trademarks are goods. Okay. Service marks cover services.
What the service would be. Okay.
Right. So, so you think of Target, that would be technically a service mark because they're providing retail store services.
Okay.
And not necessarily a product. They may provide products under the Target mark as well, but trademarks and service marks, they're essentially the same thing. It's just whether they cover goods or services.
Okay.
But they identify the source of the good or service so that people know, I recognize that name or that logo, and I know what company that comes from, so I know what kind of quality I'm going to get. So those are trademarks. Copyrights protect creative works, books, movies, poems, choreographic works, sculptural works.
Music falls under that.
Yep. Yeah. And then trade secrets, that's kind of your secret sauce in your business. Yeah. That gives you a competitive advantage, but it's something that you can keep secret, internal within your company. So the recipe for Coca-Cola, that's a trade secret. Coca-Cola could have gotten a patent on it back, you know, whenever they started, but they decided this is something we can keep secret, and then you can maintain that protection indefinitely.
Okay. Because patents have a shelf life, right? It's 20 years.
20
usually.
Years from your earliest filing date.
Okay. But a trade secret you can keep forever.
Yep. As long as you can keep a secret, it'll go forever.
Yeah. Someone doesn't reveal it.
Yep.
And
exactly.
Share it with someone else.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. So. So I want to go back to the patents. So just some background on an experience I had with it. So I started, I have this little business that's making guitar practice tools, and I go out there and I say, I think I have this novel idea for this guitar practice tool that'll help people learn how to play the guitar. And so I go out there and I'm trying to figure out, all right, you know, and of course, as entrepreneurs sometimes think, or people starting businesses, this is going to change the world. No one, you know, I got to protect this.
Right.
This is a $1 billion idea. It's going to, you know, and before I do that, you know, I got to figure out, all right, who do I talk to about patenting this, and what do I need to protect it? Because I want to make sure no one goes about this. So it was years ago. I was young. I didn't have, you know, a lot of money to spend on protecting this intellectual property. So I met with someone and they started talking about, you know, a utility patent that would cost, you know, upwards of $10,000 or something like that. And they gave me an idea that maybe I file a provisional patent, which for an entrepreneur was kind of a novel idea for me. And I was unaware of that. And it gave me some protection. Can you talk a little bit about kind of maybe for an entrepreneur, why a provisional patent may be a good idea, maybe why it was a terrible idea?
Sure.
For me?
So provisional patents, just kind of a background of what they are, and then we'll get into the meat of how they can be used to really help protect your idea in that early stage.
Okay.
So a provisional patent, you file a provisional patent with the patent office. It gives you a year of protection.
And it basically just kind of puts you in line to file, right?
Yep.
You don't go through, you don't do all the artwork, you don't do everything. It's just holding your place in line.
So everything in the patent world is based around your filing date.
Yeah.
So it gets you a filing date, draws that line in the sand for you, kind of gets you in line, but it doesn't get examined by the patent office. It doesn't ever actually issue as a patent, but it buys you a year so that you can take your idea, you can go out and market it, disclose it to the public, see if it's going to work, see if there's really a market for it.
Yeah.
Without spending a ton of money, because provisionals, you can do them cheaper than a full blown utility application. So it kind of gets you in line, with relatively low cost and buys you time to do market testing, continue to refine the invention. And then at the end of that year, if you want to pursue actual protection on it, patent protection, you've got to file a non-provisional or a utility application.
Yeah.
And then you go through the whole examination process with that to see whether you can get a patent on it.
Right. Okay. So do you like that course? Do you think that's smart for entrepreneurs to pursue that?
So it depends on the specific scenarios. But for early stage where, you know, cash may be tight, where you're still refining designs, you're still generating ideas, I love the idea of provisionals because you can throw them on, and if you 6 months down the road, if you've revamped your design, you can throw on another provisional without a ton of additional costs and kind of layer them. But it buys you time and it allows you to go market your invention, see what kind of traction you can get, and without losing protection.
Yeah.
Because one thing we should note is in the U.S., if you disclose your invention to the public before you file a patent application, you have 1 year to file a patent application. Otherwise, you give up your rights in the U.S. A lot of foreign countries don't give you that year grace period. Some give you 6 months under certain circumstances. Japan just barely is changing their law, so they give you a year like we have. Canada has a year, but most countries don't have a grace period. So if you go out and you disclose your invention, you're done. You can't get patents in other countries. So provisionals allow you to get on file, have an application on file, you can disclose it, and it doesn't bar you from getting patents either in the U.S. or around the world, but allows you to get out there and make something with your invention.
Awesome. Yeah, and always that, really, most businesses kind of know within that first year whether it's going to work or not, and maybe you're not stuck with a great patent on something that maybe is not going to get a ton of traction in the market anyway.
Or that you've diverged from. You've totally changed your design, and now your patent doesn't even really cover
what you were doing in the first place.
Exactly.
So talk a little more about, so let's say for the entrepreneur or the startup business that's out there, and let's say they come up with an app and here's an idea and here's what they're going to do. If they don't do any protection at all, let's say they just launch it and they go out and it's been a year, they can't go back in and file?
Right. Whatever they've disclosed more than a year before, they've given that to the public.
Right. So if they file first, even though someone else maybe hasn't taken that idea, could they still get the coverage? But is it sort of fair game to anyone else? Is that how I'm understanding that?
So the way it works is if you go public, then and wait more than a year to file a patent application, that idea that you had, that's in the public domain. You can't get a patent on it. Nobody else can either.
Interesting. Okay.
But if you file either before you go public or within 1 year of going public, then you can still get protection on it, and you can still block others from
because you can show
space
when you started it, the first work or artwork okay. So that year mark is kind of
critical.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and the year mark not only affects when you need to have something on file in the U.S., but once you file your U.S. case, then you have another year to file in foreign countries. So if you want protection in Europe or China or wherever else, you've got a year from when you initially file your patent application to go in foreign countries, and that's one thing to consider. Is because that gets expensive.
Yeah.
So you've got to pick your target markets where you're going to either make or sell the product, and focus on those. You don't want to try and get protection everywhere because that'll bankrupt your company.
Yeah. So I had a little experience with that where it was within that year mark. We were sort of looking at it and saying here, our product had gained some traction in Europe, and we're starting to look at some of these fees, and you've got to I'm not exactly sure. I'm sure Workman probably has partners and associates that you can do work with there.
Yep.
For most startups, you don't have the connections, and we were looking at it, and the fees, like you mentioned, I mean, it started to pile on, and you just, a year into the business, you don't know necessarily how much protection do we need. And it really, these patents and trademarks and service marks and they're really only as strong as you're willing to enforce them as well, right? So even though you have the protection, and I've experienced this where we have some knockoffs out there and people, you know, doing it, but it's really only as strong as I'm willing to go out and enforce the intellectual property that I have.
Yeah. So, and but there's a range of ways you can enforce your rights. So, short of full blown litigation, which can, I mean, that can run you into the millions, especially for big time patent litigation. Even copyright and trademark litigation can be in the hundreds of thousands, if not into the millions.
Yeah.
So that right there makes people go, well, I don't have that kind of money to enforce. So should I just not get a patent or register my trademark? And I say no. There is actual value in just having an issued patent or a registered trademark.
For sure.
Because you can simply provide notice to an infringing party, and a lot of times that will be enough to have them back off and change course. I do a fair bit of that kind of work, mm-hmm. where we have clients that they've got trademarks that are being infringed, and we send notice letters, and almost always the other side just backs down. They realize that they don't want the fight any more than you do, and so they'll change course. Sometimes you got to go to the mat, and that can get expensive, but there is value in just having it, because people will see it, and that'll be a deterrent in and of itself.
What about in terms of just the overall value of a patent or you know, other intellectual property? It's got to be of value to potential investors. You're looking, talk a little bit about that, you know, just in the early days of a business, sort of the value of having a couple patents or the process, and why an investor, if I'm building a business and I have a couple patents on this process, why that's valuable.
Sure. So I saw some statistics a little while back that showed, I think it was as recently as the 60s or 70s, it was like 10 or 20% of most companies' value was in their IP. The rest was other capital investments, whether it was real estate, buildings, machinery, whatever it was. It was severely balanced towards the non-IP assets. Where now it's flip-flopped. Hmm. It's like 80 to 90% of a company's value is based in their IP.
Yeah.
And part of that, I think a large part of that is, if you have IP, you have exclusivity in a certain area, and so anybody tries to move into your area, you've got the ability to push them out, and you've got that spot locked down.
It's a huge competitive advantage. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why investors love it, because they look at it and they go, well, that's our spot. If we buy this IP or this company, then we know we've got this spot. That's ours.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome. Okay. Okay. And you're going to help up at Lassonde here shortly, so I want to be aware of your time, and we certainly appreciate you doing this. So, couple more questions. So for our audience, you know, students starting a business, at what point in the process of that startup, or their idea, or you know, they're developing a product or a service, at what point do you think, when should they involve you? When should they involve an IP attorney?
Sure. So I think once you have an idea where it's you know, matured enough that it's getting to the point where it's okay, we could take this to market. We could actually do something with this. I think you call your IP attorney. At least by that stage, if not a little earlier. And even if it's just a 30-minute meeting to say, here's the basic idea. We're still doing development in these areas. This stuff may change, but here's what we've got so far. And just have kind of that conversation to see whether it's developed enough that you need to start filing patents, or, you know, file a trademark application. Or if it's, okay, that's great, let's keep doing your development. Let's talk again in a few months. It's always better to at least get the conversation started earlier, so that you don't inadvertently disclose something before you have a patent on file, or give up rights in some way. So earlier the better. Start the conversation, even if it doesn't result in filing immediately.
Yeah.
Get the conversation rolling.
So something like that for a business owner, they call, let's use Workman, who again, I highly recommend and think would be awesome. They call you guys, maybe set up a 30-minute meeting. What sort of cost is involved in something like that? And of course, everything's going to vary in the complexity of the business, but what could someone sort of expect, you know, to pay for something like that? A quick meeting? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
If it's kind of an initial consultation, you know, a half an hour, something like that, I think most of the attorneys would just say, hey, it's on the house. Let's just talk. Let's help kind of get you oriented the right way. And then when things are ready to roll, then we'll get going.
Work out an engagement and figure it out.
Yep. So that initial kind of just really basic conversation, I don't think there's a whole lot of cost there.
You could probably even determine a lot via email trying to set up the meeting, whether or not, and the attorneys have so much experience with this and know you guys are way too early, or geez, you guys are pretty far along.
You got to get cranking.
You ought to come in this afternoon and we ought to talk to you. So it's definitely worth, you know, figuring out when the right time is to have that conversation.
Yep, definitely.
Okay, so let's get back into sort of those four main types: patents, copyright, trademark, trade secrets. Let's talk a little bit more about copyright and what businesses and entrepreneurs need to be aware of with that.
Sure. So some areas that you want to focus on and make sure you got locked down. You know, if you've got a website, you want to make sure that's protected. And that can go from, you know, registering a copyright on the actual website itself to making sure that, you know, whoever's putting your website together for you, that they've assigned any rights in the website to your company, so you actually own it and have control over the content,
even though they're the ones building it.
Right.
Yep.
And it can go down as far as, you know, user manuals for the products you sell or assembly manuals. We had a case a couple of years ago where a company was providing knockoff products, and they actually copied directly our client's assembly manuals and just using those instead of making their own. And so we got an injunction against them, shut them down. And so, you know, you may look at your user manual or your assembly manual and just think it's just the assembly manual, but that actually, protecting that, can provide you a lot of ammo.
So you would copyright a manual like that.
Yeah.
You'd copyright a website. So it'd be more than just the domain name.
Yep.
It'd be sort of each page content. Now, do you have to go through and scour each page, or is it sort of a broad encompassing, you know,
the
website?
Copyrights are interesting because most forms of IP, you actually have to take some affirmative action to get protection. For a patent, you actually have to file a patent, a trademark, you need to register it. Copyrights, as soon as you create it, you have some rights in it. Getting a registration through the government provides a heightened protection. And so filing registration on your website can give you additional protection. And you can just file it as, you know, the whole website itself. So just basically you just print out your website, file that with the copyright office, or if it's the manual, file the manual.
And so that would cover those aspects you've talked about. An app, I'm assuming, would fall under copyright.
You can do on apps, you can do, you know, the rendering, how it looks, the display. You can also register the code. There are different ways to go about it. Code is less valuable because somebody else could write totally different code that
produces
the same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, registering the screen images, that kind of thing, that's the most valuable.
Interesting. Okay. And then on patents, going back to this, just because this interests me tremendously, because I have a few and I still don't understand it whatsoever. The attorneys usually just, they'll help you determine whether it's utility, whether it's design, Plant probably seems pretty obvious.
Yeah.
And that's probably more popular now with the marijuana industry blooming.
Yep.
I didn't really understand that there were plant patents out there, but that's fascinating.
It's a pretty specialized area.
Yeah, I would assume. So just quickly, let's touch a little more on utility and design and sort of the difference.
Okay.
And why that matters or doesn't matter.
Sure. So utilities, any patent can cover a machine, a process, a composition, you know, chemical composition, that kind of thing. But then if your product has a unique look, like the Coca-Cola bottle, you can protect the look. So if somebody makes a bottle that's the same shape and has the same look, you can enforce your design patent against that. And you can also get both a utility and design protection on the same invention.
Okay.
If there's a novel aesthetic aspect to it, as well as structural functional aspects that are new. So Traeger, for example, they've got a lot of utility patents on their grills and smokers, you know, for
fire coming up and doing certain things.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. But then they could also get a patent on the way their grill looks. If there are unique aspects
that they want to protect, yeah.
Yep. Yep. So you can, it's one of those deals where it doesn't have to be either or. Sometimes it's both.
Okay. And that protects you from someone else going out and.
Yep.
Yeah. Kind of, maybe they can't do the same fire process that Traeger might, but they could build one that looked very similar and my consumers might think this is the look that I'm going for and not get what they're expecting.
And there are some distinctions between utility and design patents. For example, utility patents can be a lot broader. They can cover more variations of your product because of the way that utility patents are written. Where design, it's going to cover just the way the thing looks. And so if somebody tweaks your look a little bit, they may be able to get around your design patent, but maybe not your utility patent. But if the look is close enough and you can get them with designs, there's tremendous value. The Apple Samsung case about the iPhone with the curved corners and the round home button. I mean, that's still bouncing around on the course, but the latest damage award was $580 million. So
crazy.
I mean, there's lots of value in designs, even if the scope of protection seems like it's a little bit narrower, they can still provide a lot of value.
Interesting. So wrapping up, I want to just lastly cover sort of time frames on these things. So time frame on filing a patent, does it vary much from copyright, from trademark? I have a little experience with this where one of mine was, it was super, super quick. And then there's another user interface patent that we've submitted that's still out there.
Yep. So copyrights, they're the easiest and fastest and cheapest to do. I mean, it's if you come in with a copyright that you need registered, we can get that filed and done for you, you know, within a few days. Easy.
Wow.
And it's cheap. And the Copyright Office takes a little while to, you know, kind of stamp it and approve it, but it's, I mean, you're within the month's time frame. A trademark, kind of the same thing. It's fairly straightforward to put together and file an application. It goes through a more thorough examination process, and so sometimes there's some back and forth between us and the trademark office, but typically you're a year to 18 months, something like that. Until you're all done, registered, out
the
door.
And how long does a copyright last?
A copyright, it depends. There are a few factors that go into it, but a copyright typically lasts for the life of the author plus 70 years.
Oh, okay.
So it's a long time.
Yeah.
Trademarks, they're good as long as you continue to renew them. You have to renew them
every so often. I have a renewal notice in my inbox right now.
Yeah, so as long as you continue to renew your trademark and you continue to use it, you can keep that one going forever as well.
Okay, and patents are 20.
Patents are 20 years, but the process takes a lot longer, both to get the application ready, to get it filed, and then to deal with the back and forth with the patent office. So a design patent is fairly quick. You can usually get that on file within a few weeks. And then the back and forth process until you're all done and issued is a year to 18 months on average. And those last for 15 years. A utility patent, it can take 2 or 3 months to get it prepared and filed. And then you're probably a couple of years on average to go through the examination process until you're issued. But once you're issued, you're good to go for 20 years from when you filed your application.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dustin. This has been a pleasure to have you. This is super interesting, super relevant. A lot of our audience, they need to hear this. They need to learn about it. And we definitely want to direct them your way to help them with their protecting their intellectual property. So we appreciate you being here today with us.
Happy to do it. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.